Tuesday, May 22nd, 2018, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City. We are right here in Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every single weekday, and we talk sports with a dose of common sense. We try to push some of that emotion aside, because we know sometimes when we're watching the world of sports, we tend to get emotional. Like, we kind of lose our logic. We kind of go crazy, just get all wrapped up in what we're watching. We get all excited about what we're watching. Try to get rid of some of that. Just look at the world of sports logically. Might mix in just a hint of sarcasm here or there too. And we are happy to have you here with us on The Dose today. Happy Tuesday to you. You know, we are now on to Tuesday. Don't forget this. Don't forget this is a holiday weekend coming up. Hey, let's push forward. Let's plow ahead and let's make our way through this work week. If you'd like to contact us, let us know how your week is going. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or feel free to go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Maybe you've got a comment. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you have a suggestion. We would love to hear from you. Hey, today on the show, we are going to be discussing a few breaking news stories that have come out. Plus, you might not realize it, but today is an interesting national day of the year, and it kind of got me thinking about something that I'd really like to see. Going to talk about that in just a few minutes. Plus, there are a few job openings out there that I think we might need to discuss. Look at a few candidates for some of those jobs. We've got a lot to get to today on the Daily Dose. Let's jump right in with game four of the NBA Eastern Conference Finals that we saw last night, because, you know, we did finally see a pretty good effort from both teams in game four last night. But the only problem was only one team was actually getting the ball into the basket. You know, I thought for the first time, really, these playoffs, the Boston Celtics looked very young and very inexperienced, and the Cleveland Cavaliers, well, they kind of looked like they had been here before last night. Cleveland won game four, 111-102. And you know, they just looked quicker to the punch all night. They made the shots. They got the deflections. They blocked the shots. They came up with the loose basketballs. And now this series is even at 2-2. We have a 3-game series. Two of those games are going to be played in Boston. But if I was Boston, I don't know how good I would feel about a game seven against LeBron James. Now, early on in this game, hey, Boston was getting good looks, but they kept missing him. And the thing that I thought happened was it ended up frustrating that team. And it felt like the Boston Celtics started to worry too much about the outcome. And I totally understand that, because you're saying, hey, we're getting good looks. The ball's not going in. But hey, worry about your effort and worry about your execution. The outcome will eventually take care of itself. But what you can't let it do is you can't let those early misses take you out of your game. Boston is a very good defensive team, right? They've been one of the best defensive teams all season. They allow the Cleveland Cavaliers to shoot 51% from the field. Why? Because Boston started to look like they were almost pressing, like they were trying too hard. They were trying to run so fast, they were tripping over their own feet in the process. I didn't think this game was so much about effort from either team. I just thought Cleveland looked like they had been in this position before, and they just relaxed and played. I don't know that Cleveland was extremely sharp. They committed almost 20 turnovers, but Boston couldn't capitalize on them. And every time it looked like they might be reining them in, they'd blow up and make a few mistakes and have a few turnovers and bounce the ball off their foot or miss a dunk or miss a layup. And Cleveland would go down and hit two quick buckets, and all of a sudden, a 7-point game turns into 11 points and turns into 15 points. And it just seemed like Boston ran in mud all night. And I have to think that a lot of that is just experience. Boston doesn't have it. Cleveland does have it. And you could see that a little bit last night. Game five on Wednesday night, hey, that might be the determining game of this series. Can the Boston Celtics overcome these last two games where they have not looked good and win a game at home? Can the Cleveland Cavaliers go into Boston and steal one? Should be a very, very interesting game on Wednesday night. I think we may see which way this series is going to tilt. But you know what my biggest takeaway from this game might have been? And yes, hey, give LeBron James a ton of credit. He went out, scores 40 points another time in a playoff game. Very, very strong down the stretch. Made the plays when he had to make the plays. But you know what my biggest takeaway from this game probably was in game four? is that whoever makes it to the NBA Finals, yeah, they're going to be in big trouble against either Golden State or Houston, because I'm telling you right now, just watching these games, the Eastern Conference, they don't even look like they're playing the same game that the West is playing. And I mean, maybe it ends up being a closer series, or maybe we see an injury or something, but right now, I can't see the East even giving the West, either one of those teams, Houston or Golden State, I can't even see them winning a second game. Maybe they could win one. That was probably my biggest takeaway from last night. Little more news coming out in the NBA. Not sure if you saw this, but Houston Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni, he dropped a nasty, nasty word about his team on Monday. He said the word, can we edit this out if we need to? Okay. He used a word to describe the way the Rockets played on Sunday night when they got blown out by Golden State 126-85 in game three. He said the Rockets played, yeah, I'm going to say the S word, prepare for it. The Rockets were soft. Oh man. You know, Mike D'Antoni is pulling out the stops when he's using the word soft. There is no more insulting word out there to a team than saying that they're soft. Like, I can say a lot of things. You were bad. You didn't execute. We took bad shots. We missed shots. We were soft? Oh, is that what you're going to say? We were soft. Mike D'Antoni said, you know, it's just one thing led to another. We played soft. I mean, you can't do that with these guys, talking about the Warriors. These guys are good. You know, they lost by 41. That was the largest win for the Warriors in playoff history. And Golden State just dominated the game. Houston was horrible. They were so bad offensively. They shot just 40% from the floor, and they committed 20 turnovers. Those turnovers alone turned directly into 28 points for Golden State. Defensively, the Rockets weren't any better. They allowed the Warriors to shoot 52% from the floor. They shot 41% from three-point range. Yeah, you're not going to win too many games when that's the case. But let me defend the Rockets just a little. And I don't have any idea what Mike D'Antoni is telling them in the locker. Maybe in the locker room, Mike D'Antoni is telling his team, hey, when we are on offense, you can't just stand and watch the ball. You've got to move, even if it's just to interchange. Yes, we'd like to see some screens set. Yes, we'd like to see some cuts to the basket. But even if it is just to interchange, you have to move because your defender is just standing there waiting for us to penetrate and they can slide over and stop them. Maybe that's what he's saying. But I don't see any evidence that he's saying that. So you can blame your team. You can say they're soft, and maybe they are soft, because you know what? Moving on offense, moving defensively, and working hard defensively, those are tough things to do. You do have to be tough. If you're not doing those things, then you are soft. But like I said, I don't know that I see that coming from him. I don't see him calling timeouts and screaming at them, you're not moving. Why aren't you moving? I'm going to pull you out if you can't move. I don't see that. So is he telling them that? Because if he's not, hey, he's just as soft as they are. You can blame your team if you want to. If you're not telling them to change what they're doing and you're expecting a different result, you might need to check yourself a little bit. It is not, however, all good news for the Golden State Warriors in this series, though. It seems that Andre Iguodala is actually doubtful for tonight's game four. You know, he banged knees with James Harden on Sunday night. And they're going to have to see how the x-rays come back for Andre Iguodala. Now, it's not that Andre Iguodala is doing that much for the Warriors. I mean, what's he scoring? Like 9 points a game, gets, I don't know, 3 or 4 rebounds a game. But don't forget, if there is a true weakness to that Golden State team, it's that bench. It's already pretty short. Losing another player, a player with experience, a player that is capable of coming in and playing crunch time minutes, that doesn't help. I'm not saying that puts the Warriors at a disadvantage. Yes, they're still loaded, but that doesn't help. If there is a weakness on that team, it is that bench. They need those x-rays to come back clean, and they need Andre Iguodala in those games. Because if he isn't, that bench just gets a little bit shorter and a little less productive. They need Iguodala. Little bit of news coming out in the NFL. What is this? It seems that New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady was not at the opening of the team's organized activities on Monday. Uh-oh. That's not good, is it? You know, Brady has regularly participated in the Patriots' voluntary OTAs in the past, but he has skipped all of the team's offseason programs so far this season. You know, Brady's 40, but he said that he would miss the earlier portions of the offseason programs being based on what his family was doing and that he wanted to feel totally rejuvenated for this upcoming season. Now, offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels said a couple weeks ago that the coaches would like all the players at the workouts, but that they understood Tom Brady might not be coming to OTAs because, again, these are voluntary. Wait a second. You know, I saw this story. Tom Brady doesn't show up at OTAs. And then you're like, hey, you know, Tom Brady's not showing up at OTAs. What's going on? And then you do kind of forget because they make such a big deal out of it. Yeah, these are voluntary. All of these things are voluntary. I've been fooled again. This isn't news. You know what? That's not news at all. Tom Brady didn't go to OTAs. He didn't volunteer to go to OTAs. This isn't a story. Stop telling us this crap. This is just more foolishness. You know what? I'm not talking about this anymore. Hey, coming back. Today is a very, very important national day that you might not be aware of. Well, actually, it's not really that important at all, but it is a fun national day that you might not be aware of. And it brought to mind a competition that I just wish there was some way that we could see it. So today, May 22nd, National Solitaire Day recognizes a card game that has been around for like 200 years. Now, you might know Solitaire as a game called Klondike, the classic version of the game. It uses a standard deck of 52 cards. The object of the game, of course, is to clear the board. You create a stack from low to high, from aces up to kings in each suit. And if you can complete each suit, then the game of Solitaire is won, right? Solitaire, of course, is played by just one person. Now, remember back, you might remember this if you're old enough. Remember back when you had like Windows 3.0, something like that, 4.0, and you were at work and you would get so fast at getting to Solitaire. Like you had to click programs, accessories, games, something like that. And then you could play either Free Cell or Hearts or that stupid Minesweeper game that nobody understood, or you could play Solitaire. And I don't know about you, but I just kept Solitaire kind of minimized down on my desktop. And if I was on like a call, I'm working in the corporate world and I'm doing something and things are kind of slow, I just bring up Solitaire and just click, 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 and just kind of play Solitaire, right? And really, it wasn't that the game was so great. It was just kind of a time killer. And the best part about the game itself was really if you ever got to hear this sound. And you had to be careful hearing that sound in the office because everybody around you knew what that sound meant. Oh, he's over there playing Solitaire. He's not even working. He's on this call just goofing around. So you had to be careful about it, but that was the best part of playing Solitaire. But we're actually not going to discuss the game of Solitaire today. That's not what I'm looking at today. I am more interested in the idea of Solitaire as in playing a game by yourself. Now, in the game of basketball, you play 5-on-5, right? Some players excel playing 5-on-5. When you think back of some of the greatest players in NBA history, think back to someone like John Stockton. You could make a case that John Stockton could be the best pure point guard to ever play the game. He was a phenomenal player. But would he wow you with just his one-on-one game? Like if you just put him in a situation, he's just playing one-on-one against the best of the best, would John Stockton be the best? Probably not. I mean, he'd be okay, but he probably wouldn't be the best one-on-one player. John Stockton would be better in a team game. Maybe you take a player like a Bill Russell or a Tim Duncan. I mean, they dominated. They won. They have rings. They were both defensive presences out there. Both very, very good passers. I'm not sure that Bill Russell or Tim Duncan is going to dominate in a game of one-on-one. They were more team players. Now, I started thinking, on Solitaire Day, what if we could somehow, again, you know, kind of imagine, what if we could somehow put together the Daily Dose Solitaire Tournament? I'm not going to have you play a team game. At the Daily Dose Solitaire Tournament, we are going to take the greatest players of all time, and you're going to play each other in a tournament, but it is one-on-one only. It is make it, take it. It is playground rules, and it is one-on-one. You score 11, you go on. You don't score 11, you go home. I would love to see the Daily Dose Solitaire Tournament, and I understand we're going to have some issues with time. We're going to have to figure out how to go back in time, how to get in that time machine and move around. I get all that, but I do think there would be some phenomenal matchups if we could somehow put together the Daily Dose Solitaire Tournament, right? But here's the thing that I was thinking of. When we think of the greatest players of all time, and, you know, Stockton, Russell, Duncan, those guys are on the list. Would they be the best in a one-on-one format? Probably not. But when we think of a few names, and I'm not going to throw these guys out in a particular order, so don't sit there and say, oh, you think he's the best and he's second and he's third. Maybe I will. I don't know. But let's just say I'm going to throw out some names here. Okay. And these are the best of the best. We know that some of these guys are the best to ever play the game. Guys like Michael Jordan, guys like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Hakeem Olajuwon, Kobe Bryant, Wilt Chamberlain, LeBron James. Yes, I put LeBron on there. Quit crying. Julius Irving, Shaquille O'Neal, Charles Barkley, Karl Malone. We know those players would be very, very good in our Daily Dose Solitaire Tournament, right? They're going to be probably the cream of the crop. Like, any of those guys could conceivably win the whole thing. But what if we went on? Like, we're going to open up the tournament like the NCAA keeps doing. They just keep adding more and more teams. What if we were going to open it up to another set of players? What if we went beyond the greatest players ever? And we looked for just some of the greatest one-on-one players outside that group. A few of the players that might not be the first that would come to mind as far as the greatest players ever, but guys that would be deadly, deadly dangerous in a one-on-one contest like this. Here, I'll show you what I'm talking about. Because think of a few of these players I'm going to throw out there. Again, are they some of the greatest ever? Yes. Would you be putting it in like your top five, top 10? Probably not. But I'm telling you right now, I'm going to give you a group of players. They might be a tough out in a one-on-one competition. Here's one guy. He might not be the first guy that pops into your head. But if you went and you got Dirk Nowitzki in his prime, he's going to be a pretty tough matchup for almost everyone. He can post you up. He can shoot outside. He's 7 feet tall. And if nothing else, Dirk has that little turnaround where he kicks his leg out and kicks you in the leg and creates space to get away from you. Dirk Nowitzki might not pop into your mind. He's going to be pretty good in a one-on-one contest. If he gets the ball first, hey, he might knock out anybody. Another guy that is going to be a tough matchup, and he might end up in that hallowed elite eventually by the time it's all over. But we have to let him play a few more years. But what do you do with Kevin Durant? I mean, look at the Houston Rockets right now. They don't know what to do with Kevin Durant. He's 7 feet tall. He handles the ball like a guard. His mid-range game is so much better than people think. He can go to the basket. He can shoot outside. Kevin Durant's going to be pretty good in a one-on-one competition. What about someone that might have the prettiest jump shot in the history of the game? I mean, if you are teaching kids how to shoot the ball, you tell them, go find videos of Ray Allen. But, you know, we kind of forget in his prime, Ray Allen could beat you off the dribble. He could explode to the basket. Don't let him shoot it from outside because he's one of the deadliest three-point shooters in NBA history. How are you going to stop him in a one-on-one contest? Ray Allen be pretty good. I'll give you a player that would be very, very underrated. I think he's one of the most underrated and forgotten players in NBA history. But Elgin Baylor was a physical freak before the time when we really thought of physical freaks. Imagine what Elgin Baylor would do with today's training methods. Because he was so strong. He had such a good mid-range game. He could hang in the air. He could finish his jump shots. Elgin Baylor would be pretty tough. I'll give you a little guy that would be tougher than you think. Because Allen Iverson was an absolute jet. Playing one-on-one would be such a tough task against AI. Because he was so quick and he was such a good ball handler. And yes, he carried it a little on his crossover. But if the ref lets him get away with it, yeah, you're going to have a hard time ever getting a stop on him because he was so lightning quick. Now, he might struggle a little defensively if he turns it over. But in his prime, nobody was tougher than Allen Iverson. Dude was absolutely fearless for a little guy. He'd be a tough out. This next guy I'm going to give you, it might never come to your mind to think of because he is what you would label as kind of a white stiff. But when you think of all the low post moves that Kevin McHale had, how are you going to stop him consistently? He's going to drop step on you. He's going to jump hook on you. He's going to up and under you. He is going to use the rim to protect his shot and just use every reverse in the book back and forth. Hey, Kevin McHale scored like 50 in games where guys could mug you. A 7-footer with those long arms and every post move in the book, yeah, you're going to struggle to stop Kevin McHale. He's going to be pretty good too. I'll give you another little guy, because he was Allen Iverson before Allen Iverson. Isaiah Thomas in his prime was absolutely nasty. So quick, so tough. He was a great ball handler. He had a deadly shot. Don't forget this. Isaiah Thomas once scored 16 points in 94 seconds in a playoff game. That doesn't make any sense. Isaiah Thomas could keep you off balance. He always had that little hesitate and go, and he would just blow past you. No, you're going to struggle chasing Isaiah Thomas around. He's one of the best ever. He might not be put up in that ultra elite group. Isaiah Thomas would be a tough out. I'll give you another little guy. Nate Archibald. You know, Tiny Archibald wasn't very big, but he was a lefty. He could cause serious problems for the opposition. Think of him as maybe an older era's Kyrie Irving, because he could score over much bigger players. He was only like 6'1". But Archibald was a playground legend in the Bronx. He knew how to score. In a one-on-one situation, yeah, he was going to be pretty good. He went on to the NBA, and Tiny Archibald was the first player to lead the league in both scoring and assists in the same team, and he did it on a pretty bad team. He scored 34 points a game and put up 11 assists every single night. Good at scoring inside, crazy body control, he could hit off-balance shots. Yeah, Nate Archibald would be really tough in a one-on-one competition. You know, the next guy, they called him the human highlight film with good reason, because Dominique Wilkins could do freakish things. He led the Atlanta Hawks to multiple 50-win seasons, which maybe at the time we just looked at and said, well, yeah, I don't know, he's winning with Atlanta. Looking back now, you won anything with the Atlanta Hawks? Really? And of course, we remember Dominique and the crazy dunks and the windmills and his explosion to the rim, but he could shoot the ball better than people think. I mean, he had some incredible battles with Michael Jordan and with Larry Bird. He was a 46% field goal shooter for his career. He shot 81% from the line for his career. And he could be pretty good in a one-on-one competition. Russell Westbrook would be really, really tough. And you know, a one-on-one contest might be the perfect fit for him, because, I mean, that's pretty much how he plays anyways, right? He attacks the basket with such ferocity. He just goes at it. You're going to struggle to stay in front of him because he is so quick. He can shoot it. He's going to rebound if he does miss. Yeah, Russ might be a sneaky pick in this contest. You know, George the Iceman Gervin is one of the best shooting guards ever, and he would be a tough out in this. He was 6'7". He had long arms. He was so good at finishing in traffic. You know, everybody remembers George Gervin in that finger roll, and with good reason. But it wasn't just that he shot the finger roll. Gervin had this great touch with a little teardrop shot that he would just flip up over the defender's outstretched arms. Gervin might score all day. You might not ever get the ball. I'll give you a couple guys that I don't know if they ever truly scratched the surface of what they could have been. First guy, Tracy McGrady. Honestly, I don't know if he was ever what he really could have been, because he had those shoulder and knee injuries, but for about 4 or 5 years, Tracy McGrady was as nasty a player as the NBA has ever seen. He would be a challenge in a tournament like this. He could shoot it. He was 6'8". He could go inside. He could handle the ball. He could shoot it from outside. He didn't always seem the most focused. He didn't always work as hard as maybe he could have, but man, you want to talk about just talent? Tracy McGrady would be right there. And another guy, kind of along those same lines, Sean Kemp. Another just freak of nature. He would be such a matchup problem for so many guys. I mean, Sean Kemp was so big, not later when he really got big, but I mean, in his prime at 6'10", he had that crazy explosion, crazy body control. He could just move and bend and lean. It would be interesting to watch Sean Kemp in his prime go against some of the guys on this list, because he was really a physical specimen. Now, unfortunately, a few people in the crowd might end up pregnant if Kemp showed up at this contest, but you know, that's just kind of how he rolled. Final guy on our list that I think would be so sneaky to win the whole thing. We're seeing him play in the playoffs right now. He would excel in a one-on-one competition. It might not be that pretty, but how do you stop James Harden one-on-one? He can shoot that step back three anytime he wants. And he can hit a crazy number of those step back threes. Plus, he gets to the basket. He can draw a foul. You know he's going left. You still can't stop him from going left. Now, I'm not sure we would all want to watch it because it's not always that entertaining to watch James Harden. But he's so strong inside. He has such good body control. James Harden would be a load in our Daily Dose Solitaire Tournament. Who would win the whole thing? Who knows? There have been so many amazing players in the history of the NBA, but I would bet a few players on this list that we kind of forget about would go a little bit further than we might originally think. Because you might look at the elite and say, oh, it's just going to be them. I'll bet a few of these players that we just named just might sneak past a few rounds that we wouldn't expect them to get to. I really, really wish there was some way that we could watch the Daily Dose Solitaire Tournament. That would be a lot of fun. Hey, coming back, you know, there are still a few NBA teams that do have coaching vacancies. Who could they be looking at to fill those jobs? We just might see some really, really interesting hires coming very, very soon. Just a quick reminder that if you do have any shopping to do, you might want to head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, your favorite movies, and your favorite video games. June's Loot Crate theme is out. It is called Colossal. Remember, size does matter. And June's Loot Crate theme is featuring colossal characters with larger than life collectibles and gear that you just can't get anywhere else. Trust us, this is going to be big. Colossal features items from Godzilla, Marvel Comics, Ghostbusters, and Jurassic Park. But if none of those franchises interest you, go over to lootcrate.com. You're going to find a number of other franchises out there. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, be sure to type Daily Dose in the coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order. Always helps to save just a little money when you can. Now, did you realize that there are still a few NBA teams that do not have head coaches right now? We did see a few late season firings, and as a result, we've got a few jobs that still need to be filled. And you know, all three of them are in the Eastern Conference. And all three of them have at least some talent, at least some opportunities to improve, but they need to go hire the right coach. Let's take a look at these three teams and let's take a look at some possibilities who they could be looking at. Of course, the Detroit Pistons fired Stan Van Gundy from his job as both head coach and personnel man, proving once again that trying to do both of those jobs, it's just way too much for one guy. You just can't do both anymore. I know back in the day, guys used to do that. You can't do it now. But the Detroit Pistons do have a few pieces. You'll remember, the Pistons did go get Blake Griffin during the season. Guard Reggie Jackson was banged up for most of the season, so they didn't get to play together all that often. You do have Andre Drummond. You do have Avery Bradley. You would think that a new head coach could come to Detroit and you might see an immediate impact. You might see the Pistons get better right away. I think that I've actually got someone in mind that would be a good fit for Detroit. You know, being here in Denver, I have been watching Chauncey Billups since he was in middle school. You know, he learned under some very, very good coaches in his playing career. He played for guys like Larry Brown. He played for guys like George Karl. Could Chauncey Billups take the Detroit Pistons job and get those players to buy into a system where you play tough defense and you get efficient shots at the offensive end? Yeah, I think Chauncey Billups could be the perfect fit for the Pistons. And over in the East, you could make an immediate impact. The Pistons could challenge for a playoff spot. They've got a few pieces. Maybe they have to get one or two more, but they've got enough pieces. At least in the East, you could compete for the postseason. Keep an eye on Detroit and see what they do. Next team up is the Orlando Magic. And I know that the Orlando Magic, it doesn't look like a promising situation. I get that. They went 25-57 under Frank Vogel. They finished second to last in the entire Eastern Conference. That's not good. And of course, it got Vogel, who is a pretty good coach, fired. But this team does have some pieces there. They just need a point guard and they need a little more depth. But when you look at Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon, Nikola Vucevic, and Jonathan Simmons, that's not a bad core of good young players. The Magic also have the 6th overall pick in the upcoming NBA draft. Could they go get a playmaker? Could they go get a point guard and become at least a contender to maybe make the postseason in an Eastern Conference that we all know is not that tough? Yeah, I think it's possible. One guy's name that I will throw out there. What if they were to take someone like Trae Young? I don't know. We'll see what Orlando does with that pick. We'll talk about that here in the next few weeks. But you know, I have heard that the Orlando Magic are interested in looking at former NBA player Jerry Stackhouse for their head coaching job. Now, he has been coaching. In fact, he coaches in the G League for the Toronto Raptors affiliate team. I'll say this, and I haven't seen Stackhouse coach. I don't know that much about him as a coach, but I know what he did as a player. If Stackhouse were to get the Orlando job, that team is going to be a lot tougher because Stackhouse didn't take anything from anyone. I would imagine his team would take on his personality a little bit. Keep an eye on what Orlando does as far as hiring a head coach. They could do a lot worse than Jerry Stackhouse. Our final team that is still looking for a new head coach, they've got the most talent, but it could be the toughest spot because the previous guy just won coach of the year, led the Toronto Raptors to their best record in history, finished in first place in the East. Oh, and then Dwayne Casey got fired. So who could take a team like Toronto and get them to actually get to the next level? Well, what about San Antonio Spurs coach Greg Popovich? That'd be a pretty good fit. You'd think he could get Toronto to the next level. No, I don't think Pop is leaving. But what about his right-hand man down in San Antonio? And by man, of course, I mean woman, because a female is going to be a head coach at some point in the NBA. It's a matter of time. And Becky Hammon, yeah, she's probably going to be that female. She has been learning at the side of Greg Popovich. Hey, Toronto has talent. This is a team that needs to buy into a system and find a way to produce in the postseason. Could Becky Hammon take them to the next level? I mean, if Raptors ownership allowed her to, she could be a nice fit. Think about Toronto putting their egos aside, playing hard and playing smart every night like San Antonio has done for years. Yeah, that sounds more like Spurs than Raptors ball. You tell me which team has had more success. It's going to be very, very interesting to see if a team gives Becky Hammon a shot. But if the right team did, and a team like Toronto did, I would think she could have some immediate success with the Toronto Raptors. And with some of the things that she learned down in San Antonio, that might be exactly what the Raptors might need. Hey, tomorrow is Wednesday, and of course we will be taking a look at some of the top sports stories coming out. And you know, it's way too early, but we just might have to talk a little bit of college football tomorrow. I'm already wanting that season to get here as soon as possible. Plus, we will have our Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings. You never know what we might be ranking this week. I have to say thank you all so much for listening to the Daily Dose. For all of you that share the show, that tell your friends, that email us, that text us, that message us, thank you very much. It is all very appreciated. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday.